Hello, I'm Carrick MacDonald, and this is Halfway to Borough, the Two Towns local history show on Cam Glen Radio. There's a wee plaque in Rutherglen Town Hall, which maybe you've seen, and it says simply, "For those volunteers from the Rutherglen and Cambuslang areas who fought for the Spanish Republic, 1936 to 1939. Heroes live forever." This year marks the 80th anniversary of the end of the Spanish Civil War, the conflict referred to in the plaque. An article in The Reformer back in 2008 gives us the background to the commemoration of these men, who believed so passionately in the Spanish Republican cause that they were prepared to travel to Spain and risk their lives defending it. Most of them had never been outside Scotland in their lives.
We live in a modern age of easy travel. You can go on holiday to Spain, 2 hours. Mm. But this is 1936, and these guys didn't even have passports. Mm. The idea of going to Spain was a bit like going to the planet Jupiter.
That was Bill Bonner of the Scottish Socialist Party. He was one of the main people behind the idea of the commemoration of these men. Bill lives in Tory Glen and has been a socialist activist for over 40 years. I began by asking Bill to describe the background to the Spanish Civil War.
The Spanish Civil War started in 1936. It was a period prior to a lot of political turmoil in Spain. But the shortened version of that is there was an election in 1936, and a left-wing, kind of left-of-centre progressive government came to power, which was branded by the opposition as communist, but it wasn't much different from, say, a Labour government, the 1945 Labour government, because its reforms were fairly moderate, but given a very conservative country, it was seen as much maybe more radical than it was. The army, who were very much tied to the old regimes, tried to stage a military coup and seize power. But the military coup failed in many areas, and so some areas came under the control of the army and others remained loyal to the government, the newly elected government, and of course that was the basis then of what turned out to be a very bloody three-year civil war. I mean, I'm recalling this a civil war and for shorthand, but there's a very questionable whether it actually was a civil war. The President of the Republic, who made an appeal for international aid, said it wasn't a civil war, that the country was being attacked by foreign forces, by the forces of international fascism. And there's a great deal of truth in that, because the core of General Franco's army were, first of all, Moroccan troops from North Africa, heavily, heavily supported by the Luftwaffe in Germany, Italian troops from Mussolini's Italy, plus an almost unlimited supply of weapons and money that was coming from Germany.
And what was the British government's position regarding the conflict?
Britain's response was one of neutrality, but that was a con trick. Basically, if all this aid is pouring in on one side, the neutrality bit of countries that maybe would have been prepared to support the Spanish government, particularly France and Britain, they were effectively blockading at the other end. So you had aid pouring in on one side in massive quantities and effectively a blockade in the other. So objectively speaking, Britain was actually supporting Franco. And we know from historical documents behind the scenes, the British ruling class and British government were quite strong supporters of Franco.
So how did men from the UK end up fighting in Spain at that time?
What actually happened was not long after, when Germany in particular intervened in the Civil War to try and shore up the military coup, the Spanish government made a worldwide appeal for volunteers to come, and something like 50,000 in total travelled from all over the world. Mm. Biggest single contingent were coming from places like France across the border, but there was a contingent came from Britain, British Battalion. British government tried to block this, and so it was actually anybody going to Spain had to go really quite clandestinely, and there was a whole network of moving people to Spain, basically, because they could be arrested and charged with, I don't know what the law would be, but it was quite a process to get to Spain.
Volunteers joined what became known as the International Brigades. What was their motivation for joining these paramilitary units?
Well, it was at the time, I mean, there's a context to this. At the time, fascism all over Europe was in the march. You saw the rise of Germany and the Nazis in Germany were now beginning to a quite aggressive foreign policy. You saw fascist regimes emerging all over Europe, sweeping across Europe. It was almost like a dark age was falling over Europe. Spain was really the next stage in that process. And there was a belief by many people, including not just foreign people on the left, that a major war was coming, and at some point you had to stop the rise of international fascism. And in many ways, Spain became, if you like, the line in the sand for a lot of people. That if we stopped them there, we might be able to stop them further down the line. So that was one motivation. The other thing is that everybody, this was a left-wing government that was elected. It was a coalition, but it was a left-wing government. So obviously amongst left-wing opinion in Europe and throughout the world, there was a lot of support and sympathy for it. And an attempt to maybe try and shore up what was the elected government of the day. So that was kind of the motivation.
The Republican government in Spain was viewed, as Bill said, with great hostility by many, domestically and internationally. Did that government, in fact, introduce the radical reforms which those factions feared that they would?
Well, I suppose in the Spanish context it might seem quite radical, although we might, looking back on it, think, so for example, votes for women were seen as quite, or a whole raft of measures of rights of women in a very Catholic, conservative country were seen as very radical. But already it wasn't any different from what was happening in other countries. The other big issue there was land reform, because Spain in 1930 had a system of land ownership and control that was really one stage away from feudalism. And so there was a colossal demand for radical reform of land and also political reform. Spain was not a democracy, you know, although it had ever so often elected government, it was also ruled by long periods of dictatorships as well. So you had, quite often it was ruled by very reactionary forces, very closely tied in with the Catholic Church. And so there was reforms along the lines of trying to make it a more secular society. Mm-hmm. Saying all that, the government really never had a chance to enact any reforms because the attack happened within weeks. So it actually never did anything.
Sure.
The other thing that was happening on the ground, though, was that people were taking their own initiatives. So peasants were seizing land and workers were seizing factories all over. They weren't waiting for the government. Mm. They just thought this is a green light to redress years and years of deprivation. And the other bit, and this ties into modern Spain, one of the parties that formed the backbone of the coalition was a Catalan national party called Escudera, who wanted, at that time, a more independent Catalonia. There was also forces in place like the Basque Country in Galicia who wanted more autonomy. And so, again, they rallied behind the government. In fact, in the case of Catalonia, were part of the government, as I say, as a way of achieving great autonomy. But saying all that, the government actually never enacted anything because it didn't last very long.
And what prompted Bill to press for the commemoration of those local men who joined the International Brigade?
I suppose a number of things. I'd always been interested in the Spanish Civil War. I have an uncle who was killed at the Battle of Jarama in 1937, which I've always had an interest in it. The Scottish Socialist Party always had connections with people who were then veterans of the Spanish Civil War, long dead now, but at the time I knew a lot of the old veterans from the old International Brigade Association. I should say also that almost half the International Brigaders came from Scotland, a big chunk of them came from Glasgow. So the International Brigade Association after the war was largely dominated in Glasgow. But the interesting thing was that when the person who was the leader of the secretary of the National Brigade Association, Bill Alexander, died, and he had the archive, his greatest fear is that people would just forget about it. But something called the International Brigade Trust was set up. It took over the archive, etc. And actually, in the 10 years, the last 10 years up to that point, there's been a massive expansion of interest with it, you know. And so we were able to contact them. They were able to get almost instantly. So, for example, we said, who came from Rotherham and Cambridge Lang? And they replied by return email. Mm. So they had every record of everybody had went, basically, in Spain and who were they and things like that. So that gave us the idea, well, let's try and organise something locally.
I'm Carrick MacDonald, and you're listening to Halfway to Borough, the Two Towns local history show on Cam Glen Radio. In this programme, I'm talking to Bill Bonner about the men from Rutherglen and Cambus Lang who fought in the Spanish Civil War.
So we approached South Lanarkshire Council at the time about holding the event. They, after some deliberation, agreed at the event. We put an advert in the local newspaper, the Rutherglen Reformer. It was just a small advert, but they ran it as an almost half-page, full-page thing, pictures. That sparked quite a lot of response from local people. And the event ultimately was a great success in here. It was maybe about 100 people here. We had folk bands here. Leader of South Lanarkshire Council came down. There's a plaque. This is in Rutherglen Town Hall. There's a plaque down there, which was paid for by a local housing association. And it turned out to be a great event. But the best thing about the event was the number of people who were the relatives of the people who had fought in Spain, the sons and daughters who all turned up, and they brought memorabilia. And they kept saying, this is a great event, but we wish we had had this event 10 years ago or 20 years ago when so-and-so was still alive. So they all turned up and brought phenomenal memorabilia that had been passed on, that just was in family collections and things like that.
And were there any personal recollections by the volunteers passed down to their families?
Well, the biggest recollection, and it's something it chimed in with any discussions I had with any old international brigaders. At the end of the day, the Spanish Civil War was lost, and Franco ruled Spain for the next 40 years. You would think that given the degree of idealism that motivated the goal, that people would become cynical or disheartened. But in fact, almost without exception, these people who came back, the ones that survived the Spanish Civil War, were proud of what they did and kept political, they remained political activists all their lives. It didn't in any way disillusion them. And that tied in very much with the memories of some of the people who were, because we were just chatting with them and they were talking to the papers and they said, oh, my grandfather, and he was always proud he went and he talked about it a great deal. And their biggest fear was the memory would just fade once that generation died out. The last veteran, I think, died about 5 years ago. And they said they would have loved to have been at an event like this. And the criticism was, why didn't we hold it 10 years ago? That, or 10 years before, that type of thing. And that's a fair criticism, actually. We live in a modern age of easy travel. You can go a holiday to Spain, 2 hours, 3 hours. But this is 1936, and these guys didn't even have passports. And I remember talking to Bill Alexander, and I'm not talking about, he was speaking at a meeting, he was the leader of the International Brigades. And he tells this story to illustrate a point. He said, this is how we got to Spain. He said, myself and someone else, we met at Glasgow Central Station at 10 o'clock to get the overnight train to London. And then we were met on the other side and taken to a safe house. And then we're taken to the south coast of England and to another safe house. And then we're on a boat and we travelled to Northern. We're picked up in France and then escorted over the border to a camp. He said, do you know the most exciting part of this journey? Central Station at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. He said, because I'd never been out of Scotland, barely been out of Glasgow. And that was the actual experience. These people weren't travelled people.
Sure.
The idea of a holiday then was a day out in Helensburgh. Mm. They didn't have passports. Yeah. The idea of going to Spain was a bit like going to planet Jupiter. Probably knew where it was on a map. Mm. And he said, that's the bit that people don't quite realise. Mm. You know, it wasn't like, let's jump on a plane to Spain. This was a 1930s. These were all young working class people. Mm-hmm. And as he built, he said, I'd never been to Scotland before. In fact, hardly any of us had.
I asked Bill to tell us what type of people were these volunteers.
Well, there was in total, it was about 1,500 went to Spain. The number of people who volunteered to go was much, much higher than that, but quite often they were not back. People who had, like, wives and families and children, but by and large were told not to go. So it was always young, single men. And they were... a lot of them were unemployed, because this is the 1930s, so a lot of them were former workers who were idle. A lot of people were miners or ex-miners, dockers or ex-dockers, that type of thing. But again, young men. I mean, the average age was in the early 20s.
And did they have any military experience?
No, because of the age-wise.
Too young for the First World War.
That's exactly it. Yeah. If it had been a decade earlier, there would have been ex-members of the British Army who would have joined, who probably had military training. This is the mid-30s.
Sure.
I think of the number of people who died from Scotland, I think there was about 70 or 80 died. I'm just trying to remember, there was a banner in the People's Palace, it listed them all. I'm sure there's about 70 or 80 died. A lot of them died in the one battle, in Battle of Jarama.
The Spanish Civil War ended in defeat for the Republican government. Bill describes the legacy of the conflict.
Well, modern political Spain in many ways is reflecting some of the conflicts at that time. If you look at the recent referendum, banned referendum in Catalonia, and the action of the Guardia Civil, the civil guard, who were paramilitary police, they were the paramilitary police under Franco, and their attitude to, or the government's attitude to places like Basque Country and Catalonia is no different from Franco. These places belong to Spain, and if you're a Catalan and you don't like it, you know where you can go. This is our country, not your country. So there's that attitude. I suppose the other thing was that after Franco's death and Spain made the transition to civilian government, and this happens sometimes, almost as if the civil war was kind of written out of history a little bit. Because in Spain it's estimated at least 1 million people were killed. And it affected just about every family. So there is a bit after the war where it wasn't talked about very much. And maybe it's to do that generation was still there. Since then, there's been a lot more discussion about roles and about what was happening. There are virtually no statues to Franco anywhere in Spain. And the few monuments to Franco that still exist... there's all campaigns to remove them and things like that. It's a separate argument about whether you remove statues and things like that.
And what about the returning members of the International Brigade? What kind of reception did they get?
Well, in Glasgow, when they arrived back in... first of all, when a decision was taken to pull them out of Spain in 1938, there was part of an agreement. The Soviet Union at the time was trying to negotiate a settlement. But by this time, the Franco's forces controlled the whole of Spain other than Madrid and was threatening to destroy Madrid. And so they were trying to broker a deal to form a national government. It was never going to work. Part of the deal was to almost airlift all the international brigaders out. I remember in total, over the period, it was 50,000 international brigaders. So they had a massive demonstration through Madrid. It's estimated 1 million people lined the streets, even when the capital was under siege. When they got back to most of them going back to Glasgow, there was mass demonstrations and support when they were coming off trains and things like that. Despite the fact that they were illegal, the authorities obviously decided not to do anything about it. I've seen archive pictures from thousands of people lying in the streets to welcome them back and with banners and things like that.
The plaque in Rutherglen Town Hall doesn't show the names of the local men who went to fight in the Spanish Civil War. I asked Bill why that was.
To be honest, this will sound quite strange, it was down to money.
Was it?
We had a £300 budget from the Housing Association and the plaque got £300.
Sure.
There's also the question, though, you then have to contact... We got the plaque at the last minute, you'd have to contact the families, although I'm sure that wouldn't have been a problem, basically.
Yeah.
And also we just wanted a simple plaque.
Sure.
And it says down there, heroes live forever.
Right.
And that's the legacy of the Spanish Civil War.
I suppose so.
The 2008 Reformer article names those men who joined the International Brigade, and I'll end the programme by naming them again. They were John Hall, Robert McCallum, Chris Smith, James Sullivan, Hugh O'Hanlon, James Cairns, Hugh Eaglesham, Henry Strachan, John Travers and Edward Biggins. I'm Carrick MacDonald, and you've been listening to Halfway to Burra, the Two Towns local history show on Camglen Radio. Many thanks to Bill Bonner, who's been talking to me about the men from Ulligan and Cambuslang who fought in the Spanish Civil War. Thanks also to Zen Boyd of Ulligan Heritage Centre for her help and support. The music was by Hugo Nifty. I hope you enjoyed this programme and that you can join me again next time. Until then, thanks for listening.
Hi, James. I was just tidying the office. Could you use the coat hanger next time? I'm a wee bit OCD about that kind of thing.
Oops, no bother. I'll hang it up. You know, it's easy to say stuff like that about OCD. I've done it too. But OCD isn't a personality quirk like a lot of us think. It's a really tough condition for a lot of people every day. When we talk about it in that way, it can put up extra barriers for people.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
No worries. It's an easy mistake to make. We're all learning. I just say I like things tidy now.
Stigma makes it harder for people to open up, ask for help and recover. And sometimes it starts with the everyday words we use or how we talk about mental health conditions. Stigma Free Lanarkshire's Challenging Stigma Tool offers simple, practical tips to help you safely challenge stigmatising behaviour. Search Stigma Free Lanarkshire resources online to learn more. Together, we can prevent and challenge mental health stigma and change lives. Mental health stigma can affect every area of your life, from being judged by family and friends to being passed over for promotion at work. At Stigma Free Lanarkshire, we know that preventing and challenging mental health stigma can make a big difference in people's lives. Come and join us at our free interactive workshop to understand mental health stigma, its impact, and what we can do about it. This workshop is open to anyone over 16, so whether you are supporting a young person or you want to promote a mentally healthy workplace, the workshop will give you the tools and resources to do that. Search Stigma Free Lanarkshire online to find out more. Together, we can prevent and challenge mental health stigma and change lives. We'll be right back.
to my grave. If you ride me like that, I'll be riding to my grave. If you ride me like that, to my grave. If you ride me like that, I'll ride to my grave.
Glen Radio, 107.9 FM.
Your voice, your music, your station.
Sevdiğim, iki gözüm, Hi, it's lovely to meet you, Sylvia, and I've met you here at The Nurture, so I'd just like to welcome you to this edition of Stories from Home and to find out how you came to be here at The Nurture Centre in Cambuslang.
Kışlanın duvarları soğuk olur, üşürsün. Uzar gider geceler, düşünür, düşünürsün. Gün sanki hep aynı gün.
I do believe that you're Turkish and did you come to Scotland as an asylum seeker and then a refugee?
My name is Sylvia. I'm a refugee. Normally I was a teacher, Turkish language teacher in my country. I worked since 2012. After then we went to Pakistan for Turkish language teaching and almost four and a half year we lived in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. But some problems that country for us, because in my country it's bad issues, bad problems. It's after then we should be other country. We went to Uganda in Africa. It's very difficult for us because I and my husband, also Turkish language teacher, we work in a school, Paktuk school in Pakistan. We are teaching for students. We love job. We love our job. Very sad. We are missing job and student. It's my English. Sorry, my English not well because I learn Turkish language. No need English. Only sometimes we teaching language cards, different materials we used. I miss for job, but now we lived in Uganda almost 4 years. After then, we came to UK. All families. I have three daughters, and it's very, I think, very big problem for my kids because different ages when we came to UK. It's psychologically it's some problems, especially middle daughter. It's
So how did you actually come to the UK? Did you fly in or?
Yeah, normal UK visas because we applied to Ankara deal.
Ankara business visa.
Ankara business visa. It's except for us. It's normally I flying in normal.
Yeah.
But we applied to refugees, asylums in airplane, airport, sorry. It's difficult, life is started.
I know, I imagine that is, I mean, I can't imagine, and I don't think many of our listeners who are tuned into Cam Glen Radio will be able to understand what that's like to arrive in a strange country and to say I need to claim asylum, you know, because you don't know what's in front of you. You know that you can't go back to what's behind you. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that that's really very difficult, you know?
It's really difficult because we don't know this country,
how his life is is here. We don't know. And tedirgin ne?
Worry.
Yani hem çocuklar için tedirgin oluyorsun, hem kendin için bilmediğin bir yerde yaşamak. Bir de sadece şey değil yani, arkanda bütün bir anını bırakarak ilerliyorsun. Yani her gittiğin yerde hatıraların var, sevdiklerin var. Onlardan kopuyorsun, bir başka ülkeye gidiyorsun. Orada bir çevre ediniyorsun, orada bir hayat kuruyorsun, onu bırakıyorsun. Sürekli ölüp ölüp dirilmek gibi. İstersen bir dene translate etmeyi.
Hi, I'm Sureyla and I'm here as translator. She says, you know, to leave all the memories and to leave your loved ones, to leave your favorite job, because you love your job and you love teaching, and also you leave your students, all good things you leave your in your behind, and you are coming to a new country and to beginning from zero. It's really hard, and it's like she says, to be died and to start to live again, to be died in every country, you are dying and starting to
rebirth
again, and because of the political problems in our country, and it affects whole our life and family issues, and as you say, you go to unknown. You don't know what's gonna happen, and she knows Turkish, and she loves to teach Turkish. But in UK, it's you can do this, but to who? You know, it's you are leaving your job, and you need to start new things to earn money and to do something. Yes, I can say this.
So you wouldn't, of course, be able to work as an asylum seeker. So it would have taken you maybe a couple of years to become a refugee, is that right? 2 years? Mm-hmm. And that kind of affects your kind of work, doesn't it? So how did you come to be in Glasgow?
Almost two years finish, two and a half maybe. One year we lived in London. After that, we came here.
And were you sent to Glasgow or?
Yeah.
You were sent by the Home Office?
Yeah. Yes, and also.
Government. Yani şey gönderdi. Ne diyorsun?
Yes, they sent, UK government sent her family to Glasgow. And also, maybe I can mention about otel hayatı ne kadar zordu.
Otel çok zordu, evet. Tam korona zamanıydı. 2020'de geldik çünkü. Her yer kapalı. Bir de bizim kaldığımız otel böyle basement'tı. Çok hiç güzel değildi. Orada korona olduğumuz için transfer olduk. Yemekleri yiyemedik. Çok baharatlı falandı. Orada çocukların psikolojisi çok etkilendi.
Hepiniz ayrı odalarda mıydınız? Böyle bir şey vardı.
Kızlar bir odada, eşim de ben bir odada. Yani odalar, yani otel güzel değildi.
And first year in the UK, they sent them, you know, when they come to UK in airport, they apply to asylum. And she says first year was really bad in the hotel because we couldn't eat the food they gave us. It was really spicy and we were not used to. And also they put the families to the different separate rooms, and in that part her daughters had some psychological issues, because you know you are in one room during whole year, normally you have to go to university, college,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and you have to start education, and your friends, they are going to universities, but they couldn't start. And also, I think that when they come to Glasgow, also they couldn't start when they come to Glasgow. It had 1 year. Üniversiteye başlamaları kızların.
Ha, çok. Züleyha 2 yıl üstüne başladı.
Yes, her biggest daughter, after 2 years, continued to her education. And, you know, she didn't finish the secondary school in UK. And because of that, colleges and universities, they didn't accept. And they want some documents. But she finished her secondary school in Uganda.
Yeah.
Uganda. And
finished.
And also, actually, she lost 2 years in her life. And also, Fatmanur, her second daughter, also she couldn't start. It took 1 or 2 years to settle down everything and to start to normal life. After 2 years, she handled.
Glasgow bizim için yeniden bir tazelenme, güzel, bize iyi geldi. Glasgow sevdik.
After London, Glasgow was really warm and people, life. We were happy in Glasgow and we felt like reborn. And yes, we loved Glasgow.
Well, I mean, it's to the benefit of Glasgow and more locally, Cambuslang Lang and Rutherglen, because, you know, you've come here with such amazing talents.
Yes,
and I mean, although I don't know you as a Turkish teacher, I do know you as a creator. And I'm looking at your hands and you have got the most fantastic hands. Excellent. And make the most exquisite crocheting. I mean, you make everything. You make blankets, you make jewellery, you make coats, you make... So how did that all begin? And because that's how I know you, Sylvia. I know you from all your beautiful,
crafts,
you know, work that you do.
Yeah, I like craft because in my country is childhood, a very, very small time, young time, maybe. We made to crochet, needlework, cross stitch, across.
Yeah, cross stitch.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, very common. Turkish people very yani bu kabiliyet hep var Türklerde.
Crafty.
Yes, yeah. They have. Crafty. Yes, this talent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Normally,
my mom taught you. Huh?
Yeah, my mom teaching. Teach me. Okay. Normally I make needlework, special Turkish needlework for different item. For example, craft, scarf, and coffee table item decoration, very famous. But when I came to Glasgow, we bought scarf, no need. I think how can made?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like empty. Yani boş durmaktan hiç hoşlanmam.
I don't like to sit, just sit
and do nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I. She's so productive.
Definitely, I should made different. Hobby, craft, sometimes I made puzzle, sometimes I paint with my daughters, different painting. Yani mutlaka bir şey üretmeyi seviyorum. Yeni şeyler denemeyi de seviyorum.
Yeah.
Because you're really productive.
Yes,
you're really wonderful, and it's wonderful. And I've seen you working; it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's like we all can knit and crochet a bit. Well, most of us kind of learn that from our mothers, but our finished product is perhaps, you know, there may be some drop stitches or something like that. But your finished product is absolutely exquisite. It's really, it's beautiful, and I just want to say that publicly, and really to kind of tell the listeners that they can come here to the Nurture and join in your classes, and they're on a Saturday, aren't they? A Saturday morning.
Yeah, yeah, every Saturday. 2 months this year, 2 months I teach crochet. With my friends, we
approaching to gloves for asylums, refugees, for gift. It's very lovely activities for us. Bir de şey, ben öğretmenlikten gelen bir şey. Öğretmeyi sevdiğim için bunu da öğretmeyi birilerine zevk alıyorum. Onun için de YouTube kanalında öğretme kanalı açtım. YouTube kanalı açtım.
Şeyin adı, adresini soruyor anne.
Ha, Silvia Sobicraft.
Evet.
Hem Instagram'da hem şeyde de aynı.
You know, from my background, I love teaching. And also, firstly, I think it was her hobby. Then also, she started to teach also crochet to community. And also, you know, they... It made a big effect in social media to make the gloves for refugees. You know, we were refugees, and also after 2-3 years, and also we wanted to make a good thing for our. I think it was for refugee. For we shared with them, and also she says. She has some accounts, Sylvia Hobbycraft. You can
Instagram or yes. And YouTube kanal.
You can follow channel. From YouTube and Instagram.
Right.
And yes, you can share your comments, and you can also come and join to us in our community. We coffee mornings. I think we love to share and to come together.
Yeah. So, do you like working with wool then? Because I see that. You know, most of your things are done with wool, but I know that you make other jewellery pieces and that as well. But, you know, do you like working with wool?
With wool?
Yeah.
Yünle çalışmayı seviyor musunuz ya da yün?
Her şeyle.
Everything.
Yani some yarn, sometimes it's rubber mı? İp.
Rubber.
Rubber. Different item. Ay yani yeni şeyler yapmak çok heyecan verici.
To create new things is my excitement. And she likes to you know recycle things also.
Yeah, recycle also.
She love to create from old items to new items.
upcycling is yes, that? Yes. Yeah, upcycling. Right.
Yeah, normally my daughters have different jumper. Last week I
unraveled.
Yeah, embroidery mi üzerine işleme yapıyorsun? Ne diyor onu işleme?
Onun ismini bilmiyorum abi.
Embroidery mi öyle bir şey?
Unraveled, unpicked.
To
or embellished, add embellished,
some this middle of the chest.
It was empty.
Chest. Yeah, empty. I met heart, heart, mm-hmm. And different
flowers,
crochet background.
Yeah, I see.
Yani kenarlarını. Çok güzel. O beni çok mutlu ediyor. Yani onu dönüştürdüm. Çünkü çok uh-huh. Boş ve sade, güzel değildi.
I think recycle to recycle some things to different items. It makes me happy, and if it's not in use, I want to
find a way to
yes to make it reusable.
Yeah.
And fantastic to look nice.
Normalde bir tane kazak vardı mesela, çocuklar onu hiç kullanmıyordular, dolapta duruyordu. Ben ona şurasına üfleyen deseni işledim, hmm. Üfleyen çiçek. İşte neyse. Şimdi kim giyecek diye sıraya girdiler. Çok hoş
and
bir şey.
And there was an item in their cupboards and my daughters they were not using and no one was looking to this. And I do some changes and in crochet or some things on it. And now they are fighting who is going to use it. And, I am. They are.
Everyone wants it. Yeah. Well, that's just testimony to your really beautiful craft work. It's really gorgeous. And I know that when other community groups come in, to the fairs that are on in the church, in the Nurture Hall, the old Trinity St Paul's Church Hall, that they always make a beeline for your stall to buy your work because it is just so gorgeous, you know. It's really lovely.
I went to a community centre 1 month nearly. First time I came, I went. All room is full of ladies and 60 age.
Yeah, older women. Yes.
Yeah. Very lovely. Retired almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Only crochet. Talking each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Very lovely area.
Very
yeah. Uh-huh. 1 month I went, but after then I'm other.
Other things came
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah.
Couldn't
continue. Yani çok değişikti. Bir de şey, ben mesela pazara git, burada şey Karbot Seyle falan gittiğimde de orada yaşlılar geliyor. Anıları görüyorlar ya, kreşeleri, anıları tazeleniyor. Benimle konuşmak istiyorlar ama benim İskoç aksanıyla biraz problemim var. İngilizcem iyi olmadığı için. Ama onların o heyecanını, mutluluğunu görmek, bazen onlara küçük hediyeler ördüklerimden verdim. Onların o mutlu olup teşekkürleri beni çok mutlu ediyordu. Onun için gidiyordum yani.
She goes some sales, you know, car boot sale or bazaar, something, some bazaars to sell her crafts. And sometimes some people come her stall,
especially old people.
Yes, especially old people, and just they look and be happy to, because all this stuff remind them their childhood memories,
yeah.
And to see their happiness, it makes me happy also. And also I give them sometimes some small gifts, and they feel so happy and thank me for this small. Happiness, and also it makes me happy for these
some,
memories.
Some old people, old men. My mother always crocheting all time. It's sometimes
crying.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, very lovely.
Because it is a, I don't want to say it's a kind of dying art here. But you know, it really is. It is beautiful, and there is nothing like something that has been kind of handmade, and it's the hours of work, and not just the work. It's the art in creating it, isn't it? And bringing pleasure in what you actually make. You know, so that's a real benefit to us, actually. And it really has been like fantastic to meet you and to see the work that you actually produce. So people can access that via YouTube and Instagram, and it's Sylvia Hobbycraft.
Sylvia's Hobbycraft.
Hobbycraft. So they'll be able to access it. So I'm just going to come to the end of the interview, and I just wondered if there's a piece of music or a tune that you would like to think of that reminds you of home or something.
Büyük kızımın çok emeği var. Kanal YouTube'da, Instagram'da, her şeyde destekçi oldu. İlk çocuklar daha sıkıntılarla baş etmek zorunda kalıyorlar. Hepsini çok seviyorum. İyi ki varlar. Ailemi çok özlüyorum. Şarkı olarak da ben Kara Tren şarkısını çok seviyorum. Özhan Eren'den.
So she says to her family's family, and I miss them so much. And she says a big thanks to my daughters, especially biggest one, and she always make my work easier and to upload the videos to the YouTube and to translate from Turkish to English. And every time she supports me, and big thanks to them, and I love them.
And to my husband.
And my husband.
It's almost my cameraman. Yeah, every time support me, and video my videos first time it's opening and subtitles writing. every time, yes, support me.
Where would we be without them, you know? Can't stand them, but we love them all the same.
Bir de hayalim söyleyeyim. Mesela benim burada tabii ki okul görünce çok yani okulu görünce anılarım tazelendiği için duygusal oluyorum ama bunu nasıl hani tabii ki İngilizcemi buna yeterli olup da burada tekrar öğretmen olmayacağımı biliyorum ama bunu İngilizcemi geliştirip yapmak istediğim şey küçük bir kafe açıp orada güzel bir arka background'da güzel bir müzik eşliğinde insanlarla orada craft yapma yani orada aktiviteler yapma bir tarafında da satışı belki orada çayını kahvesini içme böyle bir planım hayalim var.
Okay. Lastly, she says she wants to mention about her dream in UK. She knows to be a teacher. It was my dream and teaching it was my passion. But to UK in UK, maybe I cannot do this. But I want to open a cafe. And in this cafe, I want to put some lovely music and my crafts in around in this cafe, and to teach some my crafts and to do crafts with the local people, and lovely environment.
Maybe tea and or
tea,
coffee.
Yes.
Maybe cookies with
baklava.
Yes, it's my dream. I hope I can achieve it.
Well, so be it. I hope that becomes a reality.
Yes.
But can I just say thank you very much. It's been an absolute delight to chat to you. And thank you as well, Sumira, for translating for us. Thank you.
Sevdiğim, iki gözüm, bu sana ilk mektubum. Yazamadım bir türlü, biliyorum, suçluyum. Kızma sakın ne olur, sanma seni unuttum. Bildiğin gibi değil bu hasretlik denen şey. Hele bir de 10 günlük askersen, hey yavrum hey. Kışlanın duvarları soğuk olur, üşürsün. Uzar gider geceler, düşünür düşünürsün. Gün sanki hep aynı gün, hiç bitmemiş sanırsın. Ne geçmiş.
From the circuit to Spring Hall,
Eastfield to Spittal,
and across the southeast of Glasgow, this is Cam Glen Radio.
For the community,
by the community.
Marble stairs. listening to Derek McCutcheon's Rebellious Jukebox.